Scott Davis is a former Marine and veteran who has appeared on Discovery Plus and the Travel Channel. He's a talented psychic medium who specializes in evidentiary mediumship. As a paranormal investigator and police officer who works the night shift in New Jersey, he's experienced a plethora of strange events. Best known on TikTok, where he's reached over 235,000 followers, he's become well known for posting daily videos and updates of his strange and unusual experiences. Stay tuned. Destination Mystery presents Scotty the Medium.
You are listening to Mystery Media Group.
Yay!
I'm excited to have you with us, Scott. Scott and I had the opportunity to work together when we did an investigation in New Jersey. It was fun. We got a lot of good evidence and we got to know each other a little bit. And yeah. I mean, I just had a great time. I remember one thing that you said to me, Scott, when we were starting it. I was like, I've never really done this remotely before. And you said, it doesn't matter. If they're going to communicate with you, they'll find you or something like that?
Yeah, they know where you're at.
So if I put it out there that I'm wanting to communicate with a spirit at a certain place, that kind of attracts them to communicate with you, or?
I wish I had a good answer on that. You know, so I sit at this desk a lot now and I just do readings, and I do readings for people all over the world. It's not just, you know, our neighbors or people close by. So I know that that works. So it's got to work for everything else as well. If there's a spirit on a location or a ghost on a location, I've done things where I even just have people snap photos of their places and I'll do the investigation that way and kind of like psychically walk through their space and see what's going on. So if that works, then everything else has to work. Like, I don't see a limit to what we could possibly do, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it seemed to work the night that we did it. I mean, we were all getting some activity. So
yeah,
that's kind of cool.
It was neat because what I thought was really fascinating was you're all the way in Utah, right? And we're here. Yeah. And your equipment was going off in your office, which I assume doesn't happen on the regular, right?
No, I had it on yesterday when we were doing a live and nothing at all. And Michael's in Idaho, which is where I'm originally from.
Cool.
So Mike and I kind of grew up around the paranormal. We've always really enjoyed being outdoorsy and doing strange, weird things. We love to go hiking and caving and four-wheeling and all that stuff. So our podcast is kind of like Expedition Unknown meets Duck Dynasty.
Nice.
Wouldn't you say, Mike?
Yeah. Because
we're not very professional, but we like to have a fun time.
Well, I mean, you saw for me, like hanging out with me for a couple of minutes just remotely. That's just how it is. Like, if you're boring, even like if you're trying to help somebody, being a stiff does not get anybody anywhere. You have to be natural and be who you are because the environment needs to react to that, or whatever's there needs to react to that. And I think that being unadventurous or boring during an investigation isn't going to net you the results that you're really looking for.
Yeah. You know? And none of us, to be honest, none of us know how it's going to turn out, even if we've done it a million times.
Yeah, right.
It's still new to us because everything's different every time you go in. So Scott has appeared. You're known as Scotty the Medium on TikTok and Instagram, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And you have appeared on Discovery Plus and Travel Channel.
Yeah.
You're also a psychic medium, ghost hunter, and a police officer. And you work the night shift in New Jersey.
I do, yeah.
Why do you work the night shift?
The honest answer is because it's not as busy. I've been a police officer for a pretty long time and I'm kind of tired. So I work the overnight shift for that. That's the main primary reason of police work. But, you know, if anything spooky is going to happen, it happens at night. And my coworkers are always more than happy to give me a shout if they go into one of our older buildings that the alarm keeps going off or phantom 911 calls are coming from, which happens every once in a while. We get these strange calls that there shouldn't be any phone calls coming from these places. And I get to go check those out for them.
You get all the goods then when you work on that shift. You get the crazy stuff. So you kind of grew up in a town that is pretty historic and paranormally active, it sounds like.
Yeah, it was founded in 1615. Settlers came here. Lenni Lenape, Native Americans, were here first. There was hundreds of thousands of them. I don't have to tell that story over again what happened. But basically, the European settlers came in. We had a lot of Revolutionary War things happen here. The town that I live in particular did not have any law at the time. There was no police force. There was no sheriff. There was none of that stuff. And they didn't want it. And there was also no religion here, which is funny now because we probably have more churches in this town than half the state of New Jersey. Because what happened was, as people migrated here to farm, basically, or raise cattle and stuff, that's what they mainly did here. The Quakers were the first to come to town and they're like, hey, you guys don't have any religion. We need to fix that. Yeah. And they were like,
we're going to take care of that for you.
Yeah, they were like, we don't want it here. And then somebody else is like, you don't have any law either. And they're like, we also don't like that either. It's really a funny story. So there was a huge void for those things. So, of course, what happened? The people who want to bring their ideas in, they all came in and those sorts of things happened. So we got a lot of religion, a lot of law. And then, of course, the town people were fighting with it. It's just like this huge, like, historical mass of craziness that led to, I think, a lot of the paranormal stuff that happens today here.
Yeah. So you said you'd been a police officer
since 2012. I was in the United States Marine Corps before that. So I was a Marine from 2005. Right. Yeah. So I've been doing something in this form or fashion for a pretty long time.
And what's it like when you go on these calls that are, I mean, I'm assuming that your detective work and your police work help you with your paranormal investigations. It really helps you to become more thorough and tell us how that kind of works together.
So on the police side of it, I don't use really any of my mediumship or psychic abilities. They don't come in handy unless something strange is happening, in which case I'm willing to put on that hat. But as far as, like, you know, it's not like a television show where they're going to be like, call Scott, he can give us the clues to help us solve this case. Right. That has happened, but it has happened super unofficially, where people will call me and be like, you know who this is. Do you know anything or can you give us any information? I have fed them information that has helped them understand their case better and understand what was going on, but it's super unofficial. Nobody's ever been like, call them up and pay them to do it. Doesn't happen. But on the other side of it, with the paranormal stuff, yes, I became a much better investigator because of the police work. I got very good at interviewing people and understanding that witnesses aren't always the most credible people in the world. And it's not because they're trying to lie. It's because they misinterpret what they saw, felt, or heard. And you have to take in that, their emotional state and all those sorts of things. And then, you know, just going into a site and looking at it in a very objective way to, like, okay, is it paranormal or not? Let's see what's on the location. Let's check out the structure. Is there anything in the structure that could be causing these issues? Is there anything that's going to make us feel like we're being haunted? And then once we get to all that stuff, the logical stuff, if we're left with more questions of, like, no, there's actually something happening here, then we get more into the paranormal and try to understand that. So, yeah.
That's kind of Mike's specialty, too.
I repair buildings. I've been doing it for a long time. And I work for the fire department, and teaching kids how to break into things and looking for things versus knowing where shutoff, like electrical shutoffs are and how doors work and how the casings are and stuff like that. So it's a little easier for me. And so sometimes when we get them, this happened. Well, the ballast got hot and the light turned off. Doesn't mean the ghost was stealing power necessarily, because metal, for example, on a thermostat, when a metal gets hot, it turns it off and on. So it can do the same. Not always, but it can do the same thing. I got to be careful when we're investigating, because sometimes it's, you know, the ballast just got hot and turned it off. So,
right. So that's a good background to have. I have one just like that, a very interesting story that now that you talk about that. In our old police building, it had to be 100 years old. There was a basement that sat very much underground. And one of the civilian employees got my ear and they were like, hey, at nighttime when I'm down here, the light turns itself off and I can hear the light switch flick and there's nobody down here but me. So I was like, well, that's interesting. Why would it do that? And I was like, you can physically hear it? And she was like, yeah, I can hear the light switch click and the light goes off. So I took the little plate cover off the light switch and I investigated the switch itself. And I did a little research and I found somebody who knew what they were talking about. And as it turns out, in basements with these particular kinds of light switches, when moisture would build up, it would actually pop the physical light switch up or down. And I think that that's what was happening, because I didn't get a sense that there was a haunting, but I came up with a really logical reason as to why it would happen. And that sort of made the person feel better, because they were down in this creepy basement by themselves for 8 hours at nighttime when nobody else was there. You know, that could be pretty unnerving to have the lights thrown off on you. But I gave her the logical reason of why it would be happening. I showed her the write-up from an electrician. He explained it. And I was like, there you go. We're in a basement. The moisture goes up and down a lot down here. So that would be a reason why the gate would expand and contract and cause the light to go on and off. So we came up with a logical reason instead of a paranormal one, which is fantastic. And somebody with a lot of knowledge like you, Mike, is perfect, because then you don't have a layman like me looking for the answers. You can just walk into a building and say, like, look, these are the structural issues that you're having, and it's not paranormal. So that's fantastic. That's really good to have.
I mean, you did that recently in an investigation that we did, where the homeowners thought that a pipe had moved afterwards and they were concerned about it. And you were able to go back. He was wearing a body cam and he was able to go back and say, oh, no, look, I passed by it and it was like this when I was there. So it hasn't moved. And did it make them feel better, more comforted?
Yeah, I think that it helped them, because they weren't paying attention to the details like we were. And actually, it was funny, because I thought the pipe where it was, I don't even know what it was for. It's just in a strange place. So when I passed by it, I even made a mental note that it was there. And I was like, wow, that's strange. I've never seen that come off a house before. And thank goodness the body camera had picked it up where it was. So that way we could go back and be like, hey, listen, it didn't move. It's exactly where it was when we came 2 days ago. You can't make it paranormal. It's not. So that's important to be able to do.
And I found that sometimes people that we work with are very happy to hear that. They're like, oh, good. We were hoping that's what the issue was. And sometimes they're like, no, we really think it's paranormal, even if it's not. It's like they're for it.
I did a house in New Jersey where the family all but kicked me out. I went into their home. It was probably about 150-year-old farmhouse, and it was really messy. And I was like, well, this would make anybody uncomfortable because it's messy, but let's start down in the basement and we'll work our way up and we'll see what's going on. And I'm always very polite. I don't try to be mean, because my house ain't the most organized. Right. I got a bunch of kids running around, so it can feel a little uncomfortable at times. So I went down in their basement, and I'm no a home inspector or anything, but I know what black mold is. So I looked for that right off the bat, or loose wires and things like that. And sure enough, up in the rafters above our head in this old farmhouse, there was clumps of black mold. Like, I was so, like, I got afraid, because I was like, wow, this is bad. You can't live here. I brought the two folks down. I was like, look, all the black mold up in the rafters. It's like, I don't know where your leak is, but this is probably what, you know, quote unquote paranormal issues is. Black mold will cause hallucinations, rashes, nausea, and all kinds of other crazy things that you wouldn't think of. So they were like, no, there are ghosts here. And I was like, you have to get rid of the black mold before we can come back and do an investigation, because I'm not going to be in here. And they pretty much were like, you can leave. And they thought I was full of baloney, but I hope they got it fixed, because black mold will kill you.
Yeah, that's dangerous.
They were not happy to hear it wasn't ghost. If it was, they didn't want to listen about it. So what can I do?
And how do you know until that issue is resolved first?
Right, exactly.
We had the same kind of thing happen when we were called. A little girl they thought she was being terrorized at night. And we actually witnessed what was happening with her. And we're like, those are night terrors. We did a full investigation. We didn't really come up with, there was a few things that could have been paranormal, but we're like, you really need to take her to the pediatrician and see what's going on. But it looks to me like she's having night terrors. And we had a couple of people in our group that are medical experts, and that's what they said too. But they didn't want to hear it, and they wouldn't take her to the pediatrician, and they kept calling us to come to their house. And I'm like, have you taken her to the pediatrician yet? And they didn't.
Right. It's like, it's funny because that's one of the things that I like to tell people also is we have to rule out every last aspect of what could be happening here. So if I'm talking to somebody and I feel like they may have some sort of mental issue that needs to be taken care of by a medical professional, it's one of the first things I tell them. As a matter of fact, many times when we do an interview, even before I get to the house, I'll ask those questions. Like, does anybody in the house have like any sort of mental health issues? Is there any bipolar, depression, you know, suicide attempts, all those sorts of things to try to understand a little bit better before we go into the home? Some people lie. Mm-hmm. I found that they'll be like, no, we have no issues. And then you get there and their whole counter is full of medicine. And it's like, why do you describe all of this plethora of interesting things you got here? Because they want it to be ghosts and they don't want it to be them, you know?
And in some cases they could still have that paranormal activity, but you know, it's helpful to know all that information up front before you just go in and assume that it's automatically ghosts. So Scott, tell us when you knew you were a medium.
Well, it's a tough term, right?
Right.
Medium is a tough one because it's sort of a label and I don't know that it's the right label, but it lets me help people kind of understand what I do. When I was little, like a little kid, I remember having conversations with people and my parents would be like, who are you talking to? And I'd tell them like, oh, you didn't see so-and-so? No. And they'd be like, stop doing that. It's weird. Beyond the imaginary friend thing, you know, like, so don't do that. So that continued on until I was probably like 10 or so. Then it sort of tapered off in my teenage years, whenever my friends and I would go do like the things like you and your brother here do, go out and find spooky adventures to get into or cool places to go that might have paranormal activity. My friends would be the first to ask me to come because anytime I went somewhere, we'd have something happen. But even then it didn't really have a name, right? So
I feel like it's attracted to you.
Yeah, I think so. So it wasn't until I was probably, I think, about 31 or so. I was home. It was after a shift of work at the department. I was taking a shower and I got this crazy voice that came in my head out of nowhere. And I swear to you, I'm listening to somebody else talk in my head. And I was like, it's over. I was like, you are hearing voices. This is it. You're done. Like, you're going to have to go to the funny farm. But something else inside of me was like, listen, take notes and find out what this is. So I listened to the voice. It gave me a lot of interesting information. And I went to my mom's friend who this person who was talking to me identified himself as my mom's friend's dad. And so I called my mom and I was like, do you think that Vicky would be interested in hearing from her dad if he gave a message from like heaven, I guess? And my mom was like, of all the people, yes, she would be the one person that would listen to anything you had to say. She loves that kind of stuff. So I called the lady. We set up a little date. I went to her house and I brought my notebook and I was like, so is your dad Pop? And she was like, uh-huh. And I said, I remember this guy. I tell a story a lot because it's so interesting. So I said, all right, listen, I was taking a shower and this voice popped in and he said, my name's Pop. And then he started showing me like photographs in my head, like they were my own memory, but they're, I don't know these things. So she's like, all right, tell me what you saw. So he showed me a wedding where there was a blue classic sports car and the wedding party, like people in gowns and tuxes and stuff were taking photos around the car. And I was like, do you understand why he would show something like that if it's him? And she was like, oh yeah. She's like, last weekend, our family went to a big wedding and the wedding party rented out a classic blue sports car and they were taking photographs near it. My dad would have loved it and he would have been at that wedding. It's our cousin. So I was like, okay. And I was like, also, was your dad like a Civil War reenactor or something? And she was like, yep. He has a whole cabinet full of that stuff. He loved it. He would dress up him and my mom and they would go out to Gettysburg and do that. And I was like, okay, interesting. And then the one that really sealed the deal was her mom, Pop's widow, lived in the apartment underneath Vicky's home. And I said, okay. He also showed me a photograph of a gentleman in a tuxedo. And next to him is a woman in a pink dress with white pearls. She has pearl earrings, brown short hair, and her name is Anna. When he told me about her, I could smell like cakes and cupcakes and treats and stuff. And it was so strong. Even while I'm in the shower with shampoo and all the things going on, I could smell the cupcakes. It was so strong. So she's like, hold on, let me call my mom up here and tell her about it. So the mom comes up and she brings up this big wedding album book. And she blows the dust off of it. And I tell her about the photograph. She's like, hold on. And she opens up the book. And there's the photograph of the man in the tux and the woman in the pink, Anna. It was Pop and his mom on his wedding day taking a photograph together. And she's like, there's no way that you could have ever known about this photograph and described it so perfectly unless my husband told you about it. And that was when I was like, holy crap, what is going on up here? Why is this happening? And being an investigator on the police side, I was like, I'm going to find out what this is because it's really intriguing to me. So I sat with people for a year and a half doing free quote unquote readings. I'd sit with them and I'd just say like, all right, sit with me. I'm going to see what information I can just blurt out that you can tell me is relevant to maybe somebody who's dead. And people who had never done psychic stuff were like, holy crap, that was crazy. And then the people who are like professionals who go to like mediums and psychics all the time, they were the ones who were encouraging me the most because they were like, Scott, we sit with people and we pay them $400 or $500 an hour and you crushed it. And they were like, you just crushed any of them. And they were naming like some of the more famous mediums. And they were like, nobody's ever given us information like this. It's insane. So I was like, really? So I just kept practicing and practicing. And then eventually I was like, you know what? I might as well say that this is who I am and it's what I can do. It's been a year and a half and I've never had anybody tell me I was full of crap that I've practiced with. So that's what happened. I just went on it. That's how I knew I was a quote unquote medium.
That's crazy. So you're able to hear, see, and smell.
Feel it. One of the strangest occurrences I've ever had doing a spirit reading for somebody was I was sitting in their kitchen and their grandmother came through. And this family wasn't quite sold that I was talking to their grandmother. So the woman on the other side, the grandma, kind of got like creative. And in an instant, I heard a glass jar shatter. And then I went blind out of my left eye. I just lost sight, like it shut off. It made me flinch and I jumped. I was like, what the hell? And then I said to them, I was like, your grandma was blind out of her left eye because she dropped a glass jar and it shattered and a piece of glass hit her in the eye. And they were like, holy crap. They're like, that, yeah, that's 100% our grandmother. Like when she was 20, that happened. So that was like one of those wild instances where like there's unrefutable proof that that is somebody on the other side talking and doing something so physical to be able to shut off my own eyesight, which is nuts. Yeah.
Are you able to quote unquote turn it on and off as you please, or does it just happen when it happens?
99% of the time now, since I'm in control of it, I can turn it on and off. However, every once in a while, I'll be somewhere and a spirit is really strong or they're really nagging or they're really persistent because I'm always aware that they're there, but they sort of like respect the boundary now because they understand that I'm like a working medium, right? Like, so they know I'm going to turn on eventually and talk for them. So they kind of respect that boundary now. But sometimes you get them and they're really impetuous and they're like, you have to listen, you have to listen, you have to listen, you have to listen. And it's gotten to the point where I've been out with my wife and one of my favorite times that ever happened was we were sitting in this really busy restaurant. There's a lot going on and it was really cool. They had the air conditioner on, there was a fan and we're just eating. And all of a sudden my wife looks at me and she goes, who's trying to talk to you? And she's not psychic. And I was like, what? And she goes, Scott, the air stopped moving. It's warm. And I feel something. And I was like, oh. And she was right. There was this lady who had passed away from like brain cancer. And she was like right in my ear and her husband was eating dinner at like a table and a half away or something. And she was like, you have to talk to him. You have to talk to him. And I don't do that because I think that the living people have to be really ready for that message. And I don't want to hurt their feelings or bring up trauma they're not ready for, those sorts of things. So I was kind of ignoring her and trying to tell her in my head, like, look, lady, I'm not doing that right now. You got to leave me alone. It was so strong. My wife even felt it. And once the lady kind of was like, fine, you're not going to do it, left, the air started circulating around us again and it cooled off.
Wow. That is really cool. I love how everybody was able to validate you and help you become better at using your gifts. Because if I started, I mean, I get things once in a while, but if I started really getting them the way you did, I'd be like, I'm crazy. And I don't even know if that I would tell anybody because I wouldn't trust myself. Being able to validate, that's cool.
Yeah, that I got really lucky. I went to Barnes & Noble and bought them out. I read every book that I can get my hands on. I went to the library. anything I get my hands on. I watch a lot of shows like, you know, Teresa Caputo, The Long Island Medium, and I watched Kim Russo, her mediumship, and I was like, okay, I know what they're doing. I get it, because I do it now. I understand. But it's like, how do you find a safe place to do it, right? So mm-hmm. I got really lucky, and I found this secret, one of these weird secret Facebook pages, and I just was searching, and this little page came up, and it had like an application, and I put it in, and the next day they accepted me. And the rules were basically like, you can't come here and ask for readings. This is specifically for people who were trying to learn. So they would put up photographs of their deceased relatives like daily. And I would just log on and type all the details of everything that was coming out. And they would come back and be like, holy crap, this is insane. You're nailing this person. Like, this is exactly what, who they were, what they did for a living, how they looked, all this sort of stuff. So it really built a lot of confidence. And then that's really what built the confidence to step out and say it, because I realized that there was really something special happening there. And ignoring it was sort of making me, I don't want to say sad, but I felt like I was missing out on something. Like right. There was something more I should be doing. And then, it turned into like me just doing like readings here and there, and like making like $20 here and there. It really wasn't a big deal. But then the more people were coming to me, the more in demand it became. And I realized like, this is a really big deal to be able to do this on the level that I accidentally can do it on, you know? So I just kept with it. And then it turned into helping people. So it turned into the paranormal investigations, helping people who are having these haunting issues. And really diving into that half of it, and then helping the people who are grieving, and they have all their spouses, their mom, their dad, their children, unfortunately, all those people who pass, helping them with their issues. And it just became a huge thing. So it's really a blessing. It's a lot of work, but it became a blessing.
That's really cool. Can you hear us, Mike?
Yeah.
Okay. He's real talkative, as you can tell, Scott.
Don't worry. I do most of the talking anyway.
He's much more interesting.
Michael's the one that makes sure the four-wheelers are running and the equipment's running good and takes us to all the cool places.
I was going to say, let me ask, what's out your way to go investigate? Like here in New Jersey, you don't need a four-wheeler unless you go to the Pine Barrens, and you can't use the four-wheeler in the Pine Barrens anyway because the trees are so close. So you park the car and you pretty much hike anywhere. I wouldn't say until you get out into like Pennsylvania or something like that you could really use four-wheelers. So it's interesting to me when I watch your clips and I'm like, oh, wow, look at them. They're jumping, no kidding, getting on ATVs and going out places and doing things. So what kinds of places are so remote that you need those sorts of vehicles to get to? Like, where are we going?
I like to get on my four-wheeler and ride and look for ghost towns and mining towns, old mine shafts, caves. We did an investigation in a cave. It was a long ways from any kind of civilization. It was a long ways. And we got footage on my thermal of, we call it the Demon Cave now, but of an image of part of a person materialized right in front of my thermal camera. And then it was there for a few seconds and then disappeared. And then Melissa caught, what do you call it, EVP? Uh-huh. She asked a question. We didn't hear it while we were there, but we heard it when we got back to the house. And something answered her in a very demonic voice. It was kind of hissing the sounds. And so this was not a case of electronic failure or signals coming from somewhere. We are so far underground and so far away from even the nearest power pole that we had zero cell service, zero internet service.
No radio signal, nothing.
I recorded it on my phone in one hand and my thermal imager in the other hand. Last year, we went and found a ghost town in the middle of nowhere. It wasn't on any maps, and I didn't know it was there. We just stumbled upon it by chance. So that's kind of what we do with four-wheelers.
That's so cool.
We try not to go to, I mean, we do go to some of the traditional haunted locations, but we love to go find anything, especially something that nobody's ever really been to or even knows about, and just see, is there any activity here? Maybe, you know, we know absolutely nothing about the location we stumbled across, but we'll do an investigation. We'll get some EVPs and footage or whatever. And then we go back and research. And it's really cool when you can corroborate the two and see that what you're getting is actually, it happened. History was there. But that's kind of what we really like to do. We like to go to these places that are out in the middle of nowhere that nobody knows about. We found that if you follow railroad tracks, you can find a lot of really cool places. Also, our favorite thing is to explore abandoned places. Hence, that's why I follow Exploring with Josh. And you really need to hook me up. He's friends with him.
I was just thinking about him today. Yeah, he's a super nice guy.
And he goes to so many cool places. I'm like, oh my gosh, how does he find this stuff?
Not to veer off course, but that young man is one of the most driven people I've ever met. He deserves every bit of success that he gets. He goes out of his way to go to some insane places. And his videos are some of my favorite. They're the things that most of us wish that we're doing or had the guts to do at some point, you know?
Exactly. And I love that he brings his friends along and is like, hey, here's so-and-so. He's always giving somebody a shout out.
Actually, that's how I ended up with Sam and Colby is because of Josh. Yeah. He went to the Shanley Hotel. He loved it there. And then Kelly, who owns the Shanley Hotel, was like, hey, we have this really great medium. He should be here also. And Josh was like, yeah, absolutely. And then when I got there, it's him, Sam and Colby and Seth Borden. And I was like, oh, okay. Super mega stars of urban exploration and paranormal investigators on YouTube. And I'm here. I was like, I didn't seem like it in the either one of the recordings, but my mind was pretty blown pretty much the whole time. I was trying not to act like I was starstruck. But, you know, when you have people that are that magnitude and operating like that, it's just insane. So it was really cool. So anyway, shout out to those guys. They're great.
Awesome.
But I like what you're doing, because if I was out near your way, it's what I'd be doing too. Maybe not going down into mine shafts. Are we talking about like rappelling, or are we talking like cave sort of things, going in and looking?
The place that I was talking about is a lava tube. All of the mine shafts we go into are pretty flat. There's very little required to get into them.
Okay, good. Yeah, because I wouldn't be happy with having to like put a rig on and get down there like that. That's not for me. Too much of a chance of like something falling in. But it's interesting.
I can't get myself back out of the hole.
What do you think? Because I like this game because you brought it up. So if you're in a tunnel and you get this really interesting thermal image of a person and then EVPs that sound really dark, why would you think that an entity would hang out in such a desolate place? What do you think makes that interesting for them?
Well, this place was within a few miles of a massacre, an Indian cowboy massacre that took place early 1900s. It's not terribly far from there. Also, sheep herders lived in the area and used that cave to, I don't know if they lived in it or not, but they watered their sheep in it. And, you know, there's a possibility that somebody got killed in there and or maybe from that massacre that happened.
Another thought, too, was there were rumors of satanic rituals happening there. So, you know, maybe that's what brought it in.
No evidence, but rumors of it.
Yeah, no evidence. But I was asking the question, who was living in this cave? And the EVP we got was darkness sent from Satan. And it was this exact same time that the image appeared on Michael's thermal. And the weird thing, too, was that his thermal like glitched right before it happened. And it shot up to like
166 degrees.
The image appears for just a few seconds. We get that EVP and then it disappears. And the temperature in the cave was like 34 degrees, I think. And when that image appeared, it dropped down to like 29 and then it went right back up to 34 as soon as it disappeared. And we were like, holy.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
So who knows?
Every time I get a thermal image on something, my camera, we use the word glitch. I don't know what the actual thing is, but it gets lines on and the temperature always goes just through the roof. But this time it went 666.8 degrees or point something degrees.
Right.
The room didn't hit that. The other thing about that cave that was interesting is there's a red spot on his back. And the most of it was a dark color, which means no heat. The outline was his face, eyes, fingertips, you could see pretty clear. But their little red spot on his back when we left the cave, my niece said something poked me while we were in there, right in the back. As far as I can tell, the same spot on her back as was on that, which I thought was an interesting coincidence.
Wow. Yeah, if that's not, really interesting.
Yeah. We've just learned that paranormal is everywhere. There is spiritual activity, energy everywhere you go. You don't have to go to a haunted building. You can probably find it anywhere you go, but you know, be careful. Like, we don't go poking the bear at all, but we love to go in and we love to go in and say, hey, we love to hear about history and, you know, what happened to you here. Is there a story you can tell us? Is there something you want people to know? We'll start to get activity. So
yeah, that's a great way to do it. I think that's a really respectful way to do it. And if there are entities or human spirits or anything there, they'd probably be more apt to communicate with you because you're being civil about it than some other investigators who might go there and show yourself.
Yeah.
Where are exactly. you, demon? You know, those exactly. sorts of things.
I hate that.
I find that spirit also likes to have a good time. They like to be funny sometimes. So
you gotta be,
yeah, and they do. It happens to me all the time. I'll see some really funny stuff when I'm investigating and I'll tell people, I'll be like, that spirit is just smacking you in the back of the head. And they're like, really? Because I have had a headache. And I'm like, yeah, well, they're just sitting behind you, whacking you. So that would make sense that you have a headache. You're feeling it. Yeah. So if you go and you're respectful and you're talking to them like the people that they were, they'll probably give you some really good information. It's interesting that you caught such a dark thing happen in a cave like that. That's a place that I would go to many times, maybe get some nerve and like camp in there and see what would happen, set up some investigative tools and a night vision camera and see what else could happen, because those are the sorts of places that, right, people aren't investigating it too often, I'm sure. So if you are safe out there to do that, you see what you can catch. You might be able to catch some really good stuff. Because if you got that, I assume it wasn't, you know, you weren't in there too long, I would guess. You got something to happen.
Maybe a couple of hours.
Yeah.
But not that was
cold, so we didn't there that long.
I mean, we rarely get anything dark. I think maybe out of everything that we've done, maybe we can count on one hand where we've gotten things that were, that really did scare us, that seemed, you know, demonic. But for the most part, it's not.
Yeah, it's usually nothing too bad.
In that cave, we were about 50 feet from the end when my wife and most of the other people that were with us were like, nope, we're done. We are not going any farther. There's something down there. And Melissa and I and my one daughter were the only ones who went all the way to the end, and we sat down on a rock. But the rest of them said, oh, no, we found there's something down there. We are not going any farther.
His wife can feel things pretty well, and so she knows when to step back.
I don't have that.
It's interesting. I have it, but you have to override it, because if you're doing this, you have to know that that's part of the risk, like going and finding out and taking that step into that really scary place. So I commend both of you and your daughter who went with you. That's cool.
Yeah.
Like, good for her getting there.
We take our kids with us a lot, and I kind of feel like our best activity is when the children are there, because they present less of a threat, I guess. I don't know, but
they have a lot more energy than we do. Yeah, there's that adolescent energy. They're more playful. Their soul is much more new than ours to this space, and they kind of attract it, I think. I think that's part of the reason, like, we feel like poltergeist activity centers around a lot of adolescents and youth, because their spirit is much more untamed than ours. We kind of learned how to control our emotions as we get older, most of us. And kids just don't have that. They just live in that moment. They're like a spirit, basically. They're just living in the moment, experiencing what's happening around them, taking it in and trying to make the best of whatever's going on around them, right? So I think that's what ghosts do a lot, too. They're like, what's happening right now, because I don't know what else is going on, and they kind of just live that way.
We have had some crazy adventures where like everything goes wrong, and you know, it's much like Duck Dynasty where we don't anyway. So we want to hear if you have any crazy stories that you want to talk about, either with an investigation or just in general.
The most recent thing that happened that I'm going to talk about ad nauseum to anybody who asked me about. And it's not because it was our friends exploring with Josh, and our other friends that we went to Pennhurst with, but we went into the infirmatory part of Pennhurst and they had just recently reopened it. And it was myself, Colin from the Paranormal Files, Josh, and Seth Borden. It was the four of us and one guide from Pennhurst, who was a really nice guy. But he was just kind of sitting in the building and not doing anything with us. The four of us went into a dark hallway at the end of the infirmatory. I gave them my psychic feeling about what was happening there. We got some really insane EVPs while we were there. A camera got knocked over. And after about 2 hours of being in this space, we're like, okay, that's good. They got what they needed for their content. And we turned around and we started headed back out of one of the dark hallways. I was the last person. So it was me, then Seth Borden and Colin, and then Josh. And they're all kind of ahead of me by a couple feet. I was like being the last one because I kind of feel like if something's going to happen, I'd like it to happen to me. It's who I am. And I got my wish this time. As we're walking down the hallway, I felt like something grabbed me by my belt and lifted me up off of my heels and onto my toes. Now, walking down this dark chute, and I felt like a hand come up underneath my belt and lifted me up by my pants like I was a kid. And I'm about 280 pounds, so something invisible lifted me up onto my toes, and that scared me. I ran for the first time ever in a paranormal investigation. I ran away. Unfortunately, the only thing running was my body cam. It caught me looking at everybody and like kind of counting like, okay, nobody's messing with me. Something invisible lifted me up and we took off.
That would freak me out.
Yeah.
I don't like being touched.
I don't mind being touched. It's just the fact that physically something lifted me up. Like, how much strength did something invisible have? It lifted me up, you know?
It's crazy.
So it was a really wild sort of thing. And I will not forget that. And I hope that one day I get to go back there and maybe have another experience like that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about your TV.
Oh, yeah, sure.
The TV shows experience you've been on. Oh, my gosh. Yes.
Yeah, sure. So the first time I got to be on TV was for the show Paranormal 911. It was a episode called Dark Passenger, which was not anything to do with my story. But basically what happened was the story revolves around an incident that happened while I was on duty as a police officer, where I answered a 911 call for a possible home invasion. And when I got there, it was just an old man. And he was like, there's somebody in the house. And I was like, no, there's not. And I checked the house and there was nobody there. And then the next night at the same time, the same exact call came. So this time I went back and before I ran inside, I looked around the house and I could hear talking and it sounded like two different voices. And the night before when I was in his house, he didn't have a TV or a radio or anything at all. So I'm hearing voices and I'm like, what the heck is making all that noise? So I went ahead and I busted into the house without knocking this time. And as I walked in, I saw a tall black shadow standing over him in his living room. And I was wow, there's something here. So I started like marching at it. And as I did that, it took off into the house. It split up into different pieces. Mm-hmm. And as I walked by, the guy looked up at me and he was like, you saw it this time. So it's neat. It's the gist of the story. I called his family and they were like, yeah, we know. We used to live there. We don't anymore because of that. And he just won't leave. So that was Paranormal 911. Then I got lucky. My friend Mary Jo from Penn Paranormal. We weren't friends yet, but she contacted me through TikTok. And she was like, hey, I'm looking for a psychic reading on this doll. So I did a huge write-up on it for her. It was the first time in a long time that I came across something that as an object that I was like, wow, this is actually haunted. There's something going on with this thing. Because I think there's a culture of people who want all dolls to be haunted, and I don't think that way. So she sent it to me, not the doll, but a photograph of it, and I gave her a whole write-up on it, and she got back to me within a couple hours, and she was like, this is so accurate, it's ridiculous as to what's going on around it, the names you gave us, and all that stuff. So then she let the cat out of the bag, and she was like, hey, I'm going to go film a TV show, The Haunting. And anybody who's into the paranormal has been watching A Haunting since day one, so I was really interested in that. So we went and filmed that show. And then after that, we went ahead and did another TV show called Eli Roth Presents My Possessed Pet, which was a lot of fun. That was about a haunted horse farm and some interesting paranormal activity that was happening there.
Tell us about your TikTok page and all your followers there.
TikTok's a lot of fun. It's an app I didn't really understand when I first started using it. Like, I think a lot of adults, it was just a bunch of kids.
I'm trying to figure it out. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's just like a bunch of kids dancing and like different kind of social kind of things that people talk about. And I realized that there was an interest in the paranormal and there wasn't that much at the time when I started. So I just started talking about the things that we just talked about, paranormal stuff, psychic medium stuff, and people took an interest to it. I had a couple really good viral videos with the topics I was talking about. And then I figured out that when I went live, did live videos, talked about these things and mediumship and stuff like that, it garnered a lot more attention. So people started following me and it's just been building since then. But I had been doing Facebook Live for a long time also. My wife and I used to do like Ouija board on Fridays. Oh, cool. Yeah, and do it live. And we'd have like 15 people watching, you know? So we were like, yes, this is so cool. And then it evolved into doing it on TikTok. Now there's like 2,000 people watching when we do things like that. So it's cool. It's a lot of fun.
If people wanted a reading from you, do you welcome that? Or are you just like, I'm busy, I can't?
Yeah, so I try to tell people like, I just don't have time to fit new people into doing readings, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. The people who are my actual subscribers, they're paid subscribers to TikTok. They're the ones who have first dibs at getting a reading. And I give them all the information first. And if they buy all my time spots, then that's it. But they pay a fee to be, I don't know what the heck is the name, like
Patreon kind of like.
Yeah, but it's through TikTok. Yeah. Uh-huh. So they pay and then they're part of like this private community and they get all the perks of doing all that stuff. So the readings go to them first and they take them first. Uh-huh. So
get a subscription through TikTok.
Yeah, get a subscription and I hope you get a fight off a couple hundred people to get to it. And I don't mean to be like that. It's just like there's one of me and not enough time in the day because I do so much different stuff, you know?
Well, that's awesome that you're able to do that, though. That just shows how good you are at what you do.
I guess. I'm all right. I'm looking forward to the other things that we're going to do together, like what you and I have hopefully lined up here and respectfully working on. And then maybe we can get Mike over here to work some ATV magic for us when we need to do desert investigations.
You're ever down this direction too. We've got a million adventures to take you on.
If I could figure out how to not do my regular job anymore and just make money, generate enough money to support everybody, that's all we'd be doing.
That's what Mike and I are trying to figure out also. So,
well, if our joint television adventure works out, I think that would be something that we could probably work on and do well. It'd be a lot of fun. Too.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm just curious about one thing from New Jersey.
Sure.
Is the New Jersey Devil real?
Oh, yeah.
Well, good question. If he is...
I just watched the X-Files.
That's a good episode, actually. If he's real, I haven't met him, but if you came here and went into the Pine Barrens, we have plenty of other really strange things happening there that you wouldn't be worried about the Jersey Devil.
In the Pine Barrens, huh?
Yep. If you look up, it's called Ong's Hat. O-N-G-S Hat. It's a village that somebody created a long time ago in the Pine Barrens. And it ends up, I don't want to give it away, but the government was involved, possible time travel, alternate universes, all documented, all in the Pine Barrens. Ong's Hat. Look it up.
Okay, I'm going to write that in my bucket list. Well, Scott, tell people how they can find you.
If anybody's looking for me, just Google Scotty the Medium or Scotty the NJ Medium and all my social media stuff will come up and you can follow me anywhere. Come hang out. We have a lot of fun.
And hopefully we'll be working together soon again.
I hope so. I'm looking forward to it.
Me too. Well, we appreciate you being on our show.
Thanks very much.
If you enjoy our show, please like, subscribe, and leave a 5-star review. For more information, you can visit www.destination-mystery.com. Find your own destination
and solve the mystery.